You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 379 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, coming to you live on this fine Monday evening. And for those of you that may be new listeners to the podcast, I am the daily host of this podcast, as well as the editor-in-chief over at SB Nation's Peachtree Hoops, covering the Atlanta Hawks. I'm also a national staff writer over at Dime Mag at UpRocks and plenty of other places around the internet. So that is who I am, and that is what we'll be doing today, talking about the Atlanta Hawks. The central storyline of the Hawks right now has to do with the head coach, and that is Mike Budenholzer and his ongoing saga when it comes to potentially leaving for greener pastures. But also on today's podcast, we'll start with a topic that's a little bit obvious in a lot of ways, but also something that hit on Monday that I wanted to discuss on the podcast, and that is the fact that the Hawks had a significant television ratings decline this season. That is, of course, not a big surprise for a team that went from the playoffs and a 10-year playoff streak to out of the playoffs with a 24-58 record, the worst record in the Eastern Conference. Of course, with that said, the Sports Business Journal came out with their reporting on all the local TV ratings on Monday afternoon, and the Hawks had the biggest ratings drop in the entire league. They dropped 53% from last year. Not a huge surprise, again, that it went down, of course. We all would have expected that. That was one of the things that people would argue against the rebuild with before it happened, and I will fully acknowledge that, you know, especially with this particular fan base and other sports and Atlanta's culture overall, it was always going to be a big drop this season. There's no way around that, as well as the fact that the Hawks also finished last in the league in attendance. To be fair, the Hawks had a sort of less to lose in attendance after they finished 26th in attendance last year with a playoff team, whereas the TV ratings were actually pretty decent in the last couple of years in comparison to the rest of the NBA, but a huge drop this year, 53% down. That is it's the biggest drop in the entire league, of course, and it's also the team's lowest mark since the 2006-2007 season. That season is important for a number of reasons, but one of them is the fact that that was the last time that the Hawks were actually bad. The following year after that, they won 37 games, which is not great, but that was Budenholzer's first, that was the first year of the playoff streak beginning. They finished as the 8th seed, and of course famously took the Boston Celtics to a 7-game series at that point in time, and from then on it was all playoffs and a little bit more interest in the team. So the TV ratings cycle is complete here, as you've gone from the worst since that last time that the Hawks were out of the playoffs. Of course, this team was actually worse than that team before that. Of course, the Hawks were pretty much the worst team in the league for a 5-year period or so. I'm not expecting necessarily that to be the case with the Hawks moving forward here. This is definitely a rebuild, and it's sort of a one that has a direction to it. Famously, also the last time that the Hawks were this bad in the TV ratings, that following June they landed Al Horford, and the rest was sort of history in that way, as Horford was one of the big keys to the team going on a 10-year playoff run. So all that to say, the Hawks are also third worst in the league this season in TV ratings, ahead of only the Brooklyn Nets and the Orlando Magic, both teams, of course, in lengthy rebuilds there. And with Brooklyn, in Brooklyn's case, they were rebuilding without draft picks, which is basically impossible to do in today's NBA, and Orlando's just kind of been toiling obscurity for quite some time since the Dwight Howard era came to an end. So again, this is pretty much all expected in a lot of ways, and I think one of the biggest questions at the outset of the rebuild was just because that was basically surrounding the fact that this fan base is pretty small. For all of the big market, small market, mid-market kind of talk, I know that Atlanta is a big market, but in terms of the actual Hawks fan base, the fan base has always been small. Even when the team was very, very good, even the 61 season, they sort of plaqued it out a little bit. There was definitely more of that tourism sort of event-based town bump that you get. But in terms of the actual sort of quote-unquote diehard or even near diehard fan base, it's not a very large fan base in a lot of ways. And that's just because, Atlanta's a transient city, without getting too deep into the fact that a lot of people in this market really like basketball. Atlanta is regularly one of the top 10 markets in the entire country when it comes to national NBA broadcasts. This is definitely an NBA city, but it's not a Hawks city at this point in time. That's something that the Hawks have worked hard to change, and hopefully if they are going to nail this rebuild, that things will be different. But at the moment, none of this is terribly surprising, and I think it will definitely, it's not a coincidence that the Hawks went down in this way just with the losing product. I do think next year, if the Hawks are able to land a lottery pick and pair him with John Collins and, Torian Prince, whatever else, I think it could certainly rise again, but I don't think it's going to be back to the playoff levels until the team reaches the playoffs again. Yeah, for better or worse, wins and losses often dictate television ratings, and that is clearly the case here. So with that said, that's kind of all I want to talk about on that. I just want to at least get that out there. And I was asked quite a bit about that on Monday afternoon. Before we get to the sort of main topic on the podcast, and that's Mike Budenholzer, I do want to remind you guys to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts especially, but Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, wherever you listen to the podcast. Hopefully we are already there. And if we're not, please let me know that. But subscribe, leave 5-star feedback if you like the podcast. Reviews, ratings, downloads. Tell your friends to do that as well. If you know a Hawks fan friend that does not necessarily already listen to the podcast, please tell them to do so, and I really appreciate them giving us a shot in the future. All right, well, now to the main event, and that's Mike Budenholzer. Since the last time we talked on Thursday night into Friday, a lot has happened. Michael Cunningham of the AJC got things started with a report on Friday afternoon that the New York Knicks had interest in Mike Budenholzer. He was the first person to get that, so shouts to MC for breaking that news before all the national guys could. Part of that same report from MC said that that Travis Schlenk, quote, has not ruled out a return for Mike Budenholzer at this point in time. That is going to be prescient here in a second when we talk about sort of all the angles to the situation. Then it sort of went quiet. There was a report from Ian Begley, ESPN, as to when Bud's interview actually was, and that was actually on Sunday, so that's now come and gone. But on Sunday night, presumably after that interview was complete, Mark Berman of the New York Post sort of unleashed a bit of a bombshell report in a lot of ways. His reporting was interesting in a lot of ways, but Mike Budenholzer apparently, according to this report, is, quote, genuinely interested, end quote, in the Knicks job. And also he cites an NBA source that says, and I quote, New York is his top choice. If they offer him the job, he would say yes, end quote. That's a little bit surprising in my opinion, but still, going back to what we talked about a little bit on the podcast with Robbie Cowan on our last show, I would encourage you guys to go back and listen to that. A lot of that still holds up at this point in time, if not all of it. One thing with the Knicks is that they can offer a lot of money. James Dolan, for all of his foibles as an owner, and he's certainly been criticized, rightly so, for a lot of different things. He does have deep pockets, and because Budenholzer has 2 years and $14 million remaining on his contract, it will probably take a pretty substantial offer to get him to sign elsewhere. The Knicks can certainly offer him that, so that's one thing to keep in mind here. But in the midst of that reporting from Mark Berman, also he says that Budenholzer is disillusioned with the rebuild. That's a quote. As well, also he says that the Hawks could be motivated on their end by finances to allow him to let him walk, which is not a big surprise. They probably don't want to pay him all that money. And another money quote from the source that he is citing here, and I quote, this wasn't Mike's decision, referring to the rebuild, of course. He didn't expect it, and he didn't want to lose games, end quote. And also, this reporting from Berman says that the Hawks may settle for cash considerations instead of draft capital. It kind of depends on how urgent they want to be to get Budenholzer off of their books. That's something I've been saying the entire time. I think a lot of people have assumed that the Hawks could sort of command whatever they wanted in draft capital. I would not go that far by any stretch, and it kind of depends on the fact that, you know, if the Hawks really want Budenholzer to not be around, that's a question that we can't necessarily answer at this point in time. But because Bud seems that he wants to get out at this point, I'm not sure the Hawks are going to have a whole lot of leverage to extract a lot of assets, and New York doesn't really have a ton of assets either. So if that's the team that comes together here with Budenholzer, I don't think the Hawks are going to get a lot in draft capital, maybe just a second-round pick or maybe nothing at all. And the cash considerations will be hanging up there. Later, after that report from Mark Berman, Michael Cunningham of the AJC, who was again very plugged in, the team's beat writer, of course, he echoed the rumblings of Bud's displeasure with the original shakeup in a piece that he wrote. Basically, the entire headline of that piece was that Cunningham does not see Budenholzer, does not see a path to Budenholzer returning, essentially. He cites a source of his own saying that, and I quote, Budenholzer is ready to return and coach the Hawks if he doesn't get another job, end quote, which is very important to note when we talk about something I'm going to ask everyone out loud here in a second. But the you know, there's a lot of different teams that could be available here before we get to, and just it sort of goes beyond the Knicks. Obviously, he's now interviewed with the Suns and the Knicks. I expect him to probably interview with the Milwaukee Bucks in the near future because, you know, Milwaukee, as soon as they were losing the playoffs, that's a team that Bud's been long linked to, you know, a couple of weeks now. Even, you know, Joe Prunty's probably the walking wounded at this point in time. I can't imagine he's going to be keeping that job necessarily unless Milwaukee goes on a very deep playoff run, which does not seem overly likely at this point in time. That's a job that makes a ton of sense for Budenholzer in a number of ways. But other jobs are open. You know, the Blazers job could be open. That would make a lot of sense if Terry Stotts was let go. A lot of people have asked me about the Spurs job. I don't really want to speculate on that, honestly, just because of the recent passing of Aaron Popovich. With that said, though, you know, obviously Bud has ties there. So if that actually became open, I can't imagine that it would be necessarily. It'd be pretty surprising to me. But if it was, then Bud would certainly be in the mix there. You have to imagine. Also, I've not heard any rumors linking Bud to the Hornets. and does not necessarily have a connection with Michael Jordan or Mitch Kupchak, but that's a job that's available that could be a Budenholzer destination theoretically. Also, Orlando and Memphis are open, but I don't think either one of those profile is perfect fits for Bud. And of course, he already turned down the opportunity to still be in consideration for the Suns job. So that's just a quick rundown of that. But overall, it's just sort of a mess right now. And a lot of things that I've said before here, but I think the biggest question and something that I wanted to add to the process, and I tweeted about this a little bit, and this has not really been found in anybody's reporting. And the biggest question that I have, and, you know, I've been pushing back a little bit on the notion that Bud is, like, you know, absolutely gone at this point. I do understand the momentum in that direction because he has been open to interviewing other places. And of course, the Hawks have been willing to let him interview in other places. At the same time, I do think that this is a very, very important question to ask. And that said, that's basically the question is, what happens if Budenholzer does not get another job? It may seem likely that he does, and frankly, I think he's the best coach available. So if you are a Bud fan, I think it would make sense to assume that he's going to get another job. But there are only so many jobs available, and if the Knicks, you know, don't offer, and the Bucks find somebody else that they want, and there aren't super, you know, this is not an endless pool of applicants that could be looking for Budenholzer services. And again, the question is, what happens if Budenholzer does not land another job? I think it's clear at this point from all the reporting that the Hawks are not going to stand in his way of getting another job. I think that's pretty clear, and everything that we've heard, that if Bud can find another job and agree to a contract, he's probably going to be gone. With that said, the Hawks could try to posture with some compensation, but I just think they're going to absolutely let him go. Still, there's no guaranteed, at least in my opinion, that Bud is both offered a job and, importantly, is willing to take it, given that he's owed still, with no questions asked, $13 or $14 million over the next two seasons. So, for instance, if Phoenix had offered the job, and that of course is not going to be happening in the future now, but if they had offered the job, given their historically cheap owner in a lot of ways, I think it's very conceivable that if Phoenix were off the job, Bud probably would have turned it down because the money just would not be there. There's no sense in Bud signing a 3 or 4 year contract with a team like Phoenix or Orlando or Memphis that may not pay him in total what he's scheduled to make with the Hawks for the next two seasons guaranteed. That makes no sense if you're Budenholzer. I know you want to coach elsewhere, but you're not going to take a huge pay cut and with less security to go sign with a team that's not necessarily in the greatest shape in the world. The Knicks could offer more money, all that fun stuff, but it just kind of goes back to the it goes back to the fact that there's no guarantee there whatsoever. And my other big question is, if Bud does not get another job, does Travis Schlenk fire him? I don't think he would. And if Bud doesn't get another job, does Bud resign and leave all that money on the table? I don't think he would. So, you know, that at that point in time, you're left with a couple of options. I guess the one sort of conceivable option will be a heavy buyout and a mutual parting of the ways. But if Bud doesn't want to take a year off from coaching, he has to get another job. I can't see Bud going to be assistant somewhere. So if he wants to stay in the coaching for this year, I don't really see that happening either. So I do agree that at this point in time, it seems likely that Bud is going to get another job and leave. With that said, I think it's very important to point out something that I've not seen anybody answer locally or nationally, is what happens with Bud if he does not get another job. So, you know, again, I think the door is open. Nobody's closed that door necessarily. It's all sort of been speculation. I think a lot of fans have closed that door, but for me, it's certainly a possibility that Bud could be back. I understand the fan base wouldn't love that in a lot of ways because he's now shown he probably doesn't want to be there. I've seen a lot of that on social media the last couple of days. It's just people, you know, lamenting Bud, like, if he doesn't want to be here, then show him the door. Like, okay, I understand that. At the same time, I don't think Tony Ressler and Travis Schlenk want to pay him $14 million to go away at this point. They know that he's a good coach. You know, from all the reporting that I've seen, if anything, the relationship got better over the course of the season between Budenholzer and Schlenk. I've heard that behind the scenes as well. At the same time, I don't think they want to pay him that money if they have to. But if they do have to pay him that money, they want him to be coaching when he's doing that. It doesn't seem to be fully untenable to me. Bud, I don't think, was terribly happy with the direction this year. None of the reporting and the buzz is new that Bud didn't want to rebuild. We kind of knew that already. Something that I talked about even when it was going on. And I think Budenholzer, as the head coach, had this like dual priority where, you know, it was pretty clear to me, and I argued for it at the time. You can go back and read or listen to the archives. But, you know, it was pretty clear the Hawks needed to at least consider a rebuild when they were sort of teetering that line, and Bud was pretty clearly the voice against it. Head coaches don't want to rebuild usually, and once he lost power and the Hawks went into a rebuild phase, this was pretty much always guaranteed to happen in some form. Bud's been, you know, professional for everything that we've seen. He's been, you know, obviously one of the better guys that you would want coaching a rebuild, honestly, in a vacuum, because he's so good at player development and his scheme is so good. At the same time, I don't think he's terribly happy with that, and that's not big news to me. So I think it would be tenable, and I think it would work. But I do understand all the pushback against that notion, just because you don't want a head coach that doesn't want to be there, or a front office that doesn't want him there. I think that sort of sets up for failure long term. And again, that's probably the reason why I think Bud is going to get another job. But there, again, there is no guarantee at all that Budenholzer is going to get another job. Even if you think that he should or could or will or all that fun stuff, it still takes a team offering him a contract, him accepting it, and coming to an agreement on a contract that makes sense for both parties, and then the Hawks letting him out of that contract. I understand all of those might seem likely in a vacuum, but all of them coming together is not a lock by any means, and I want to at least say that and just put that in the back of your mind to say, sort of answer that question for me. If he does not get a job, what happens then? And for me, I think what happens then is he sticks around in Atlanta for another season, even if it's not the greatest situation in the world. So, you know, with that rant over, I do think, you know, a couple of things that I want to say in terms of just opinion on that, after sort of laying all the facts out. I think Bud is the best coach available on the market, period. I think he is that good of a coach. I think he's probably a top 10 or 12 coach in the league. Those guys do not come open a whole lot. And just in a vacuum, the Hawks would obviously want to keep that guy. It's all about sort of the behind the scenes stuff, because I think, you know, X's and O's wise and just pure basketball coaching wise, Bud is the best available option. The Hawks will want to keep him under that circumstance, but sort of the dynamics in play are very interesting. You know, Bud's now being his boss as someone who took his job, et cetera, et cetera. We've gone over that a number of times, but I do think he is that good. I think I'm probably more optimistic overall, though, on how it would go if Bud were to return than most people would be. But buying into the new vision, you know, a GM getting his own guy, et cetera, I think those things are all definitely in play here. And buckle up over the next couple of weeks. I think the Knicks, you know, the Knicks have interviewed a lot of different candidates. And at this point in time, it would be a little bit of a surprise to me if Bud was the head coach of the Knicks in a week or two. It wouldn't blow me away by any means because of the money. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, I think the Bucks job probably makes the most sense. It's something we've been talking about and something that Robbie Cowan spoke about a lot on the last podcast. I think the Bucks, both from a personnel standpoint, a situation standpoint, they're looking for a coach to take them to the next level. Budenholzer has been to that next level, Eastern Conference Finals, 60-win team, all that fun stuff. And I think if they were to offer them a job, that would be a pretty clear upgrade. Whereas if you look at, for Budenholzer, I should say, if you look at the Knicks job, yes, they have more NBA-ready talent on the Knicks right now than the Hawks do. But if you're Bud, you're going to the Knicks because of security and money more than anything else. Maybe he wants to win a little bit more next year. And if you give me that roster versus the Hawks roster for a one-year sample, I'll tell you that the Knicks roster is better. I'd probably argue the Hawks are in better shape long-term. It depends on how you feel about Kristaps Porzingis. But at the same time, you know, you can at least say that with a straight face, that the Knicks would be better next year if Bud cares about the short term more than the long term. Whereas I'm not sure you can say that about Orlando or Memphis or Phoenix. You know, New York is a different animal. But clearly, I think Milwaukee is the job that Bud would probably target if all things were equal. But again, that requires Joe Prunty being gone and Bud being offered the job and taking it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's going to do it for today's podcast. I appreciate you guys sort of taking in my long-winded sort of explanation of all things that are going on there. I just think that one important question has to be asked, and it's one that hasn't been answered, at least in any public forum that I've seen. So I want to put that out there, sort of express the view, and sort of walk through it as best as I can. Thanks for listening to the podcast. I really appreciate everybody doing that. We'll be back again very soon. I plan to dig into some draft stuff in the near future. For now, we probably would have already been doing that if not for the Budenholzer situation. But for now, that's going to be driving the content ship for a little bit here with the news. But I promise we'll have some draft stuff as we look ahead for the next 2 months to late June. And yeah, it's going to be a big night for the Hawks in a lot of ways. But until then, we'll be talking about Budenholzer and whatever else transpires. So please stay tuned for the podcast as we get moving here. And we'll see you guys later on in the week.